Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
That is one of our goals. We try and keep every game the same as much as possible, but we also want to recognize, you know, chances to and opportunities to achieve goals, you know, kind of mile markers along the way to the ultimate goal here. So we're aware of that, and again, what drives that is our preparation more than anything.
Head coach Sean McDermott there as the Bills get ready for the San Francisco 49ers on Sunday Night Football in what will be a snowy scene in Orchard Park, New York. Sports Talk Saturday, hour number three here. Derek Kramer, Evans on the board, and now we are joined on the West Her Hotline by Alex Braske of the Batavia Daily. Alex, it's been a minute since we were able to talk to you, but it's great to hear from you again. I hope you had yourself a great Thanksgiving.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I'm enjoying some leftovers today, winterizing my windows as the snow starts to fall here in historic Batavia, New York, and a small wager placed on the Michigan Wolverines against the Ohio State Buckeyes. So all is well in Braske World.
Hey, Braske World sounds like a great place right now. And but now I'm going to ruin it with questions. I hope you're ready. So, Alex, of course, Bills sitting here second in the conference, frustratingly so, 9-2. They can clinch the division, though, with a win tomorrow night in week 12 or week 13. It's hilarious to see that being the case. It would also be the fifth straight AFC East title, and it would match their longest playoff streak in franchise history. So there is some reassuring news on the way with a win if they're able to get it tomorrow night.
Yeah, all that great stuff you mentioned, and Josh Allen getting engaged to his soon-to-be beloved Haley Steinfeld. So a lot of positive news surrounding the Bills. It seems like they should be locked into that one seed. It seems like the Chiefs should have lost about three more times than they have this season. That game last night, what a debacle from the Raiders. I mean, Matt Eberflus is probably the only one in America grateful for what happened last night. But that being said, the Bills looking for a franchise record fifth straight divisional title. Like you said, what Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean have been able to transform this franchise into under their leadership. We were all here for the drought. And now to experience what could be a franchise-setting record playoff streak. It's really incredible to watch, and you have to give those two men a lot of credit. Also, when you have the franchise quarterback, such as Josh Allen, that is the centerpiece of everything and really the fuel that makes the engine go. But, yeah, this team, who would have thought at the beginning of the season with all the transition they were going through this offseason, with the wide receiver core, the defense, the offensive line, this, that, and the other thing, two new coordinators. And they find themselves sitting pretty heading into this primetime matchup with the 49ers.
Alex, of course, with a lot of the good there, with how the Bills are constructed this year, it does seem a little different. There has been more of an emphasis on balance, on not having everything placed on Allen's plate. despite the fact that he plays well, the Bills do have themselves an MO of wanting to run the football. Whether it's James Cook or Ray Davis or Ty Johnson, it seems like the Bills have some promise in the backfield and an offensive line to help get it done.
Absolutely. I think that was the transition they wanted to make with their offense under Joe Brady, dating back to last season. You saw him utilize the running game much more. And then the transition they made along the offensive line, letting Mitch Morse go, transitioning to bigger bodies along the interior with David Edwards and Connor McGovern. It's really worked wonders. James Cook has been able to punch in those touchdowns inside the red zone, 10 on the season, if I'm not mistaken. That's a new career high. Ty Johnson has been a phenomenal third down back. And Ray Davis, you've seen splashes as well, although his implementation into the offense hasn't been as consistent as the other two. Yeah, I think the utilization of the running game has certainly taken that off Allen's plate, as you said, with Cook being able to score a little bit more in the red zone. Obviously, that was a big part of Allen's game early in his career, even recent as last season. But with Cook getting more involved, and I mentioned the other two. And then I had Bruce Nolan on right here, right now, live Buffalo Football Talk with my co-host A.J. Cebulski yesterday, and he mentioned the X factor of the Bills offense is Khalil Shakir, and I couldn't agree with him more. What he's done in terms of yards after catch, those are easy yards and those easy button throws, as AJ likes to call them, with those screens that they've been working to Khalil Shakir, has also helped Allen kind of scale things back, become more efficient, more mistake free, and everything combined with Joe Brady's tutelage has really worked wonders for the Bills, as I said.
First of all, love Bruce. Bruce is a great dude. And mentioning Khalil Shakir is exactly where I was going to go with this, as the wide receiver core looks like it's steadied up and it's just fine now. Amari Cooper comes back, and the last game that we saw these Bills was against Kansas City. Amari Cooper with a nice little one-handed grab along the sideline. Khalil Shakir does Khalil Shakir things. And it looks like this, after a lot of questions heading into the season and as late as week 5, it looks like the wide receiver core is finally in a healthy place where now you see Mac Hollins being wide receiver 3 only in a pinch, and he's able to contribute as a fourth wide receiver on this team. Dawson Knox has been able to help out with Dalton Kincaid banged up. It seems like the wide receivers, it's now doing just fine, and they might get Keon Coleman back as well for this game against San Fran.
Yeah, enough can't be said about Khalil Shakir, but obviously we already touched on him. I think you also hit the nail on the head with Mac Hollins and now Curtis Samuel starting to emerge a bit. The Bills have been looking for those reserve-type wide receivers to kind of play their role these past number of seasons. You look back at a Trent Sherfield, a Deontay Hardy recently, and they never seem to catch on. But this year, Mac Hollins, I think, has done exactly what they brought him in to do. He's playing fine on special teams, and he's also contributing offensively through some injuries. We've seen him catch some balls down the field, catch some big balls over the middle as well, a couple of touchdowns. So I think the depth of this wide receiver core is much, much more impressive than people gave it credit for at the outset of the season. And then even if you look at the top end of the receiver core, if you have a guy like Khalil Shakir being as consistent as he is, and if Keon Coleman can get back healthy, what he was producing before when he went out, he was looking like one of the best rookie wide receivers in the league, going up, making those contested catches. So I think you're absolutely correct. This wide receiver core has really impressed. Dalton Kincaid hasn't been as impressive as many believed he would be, but the wide receiver core has really picked up the slack.
By the way, I went ahead and looked back on it. Mac Hollins has caught his last 11 targets when he was having real issues with a completion percentage with his target share. He's become far more effective these last three games. Last we saw them, though, Josh Allen closes it out against Kansas City, makes what Jim Nance calls play of the year, an MVP-type moment. How is it, though, that Allen continues to still almost fly under the radar of sorts when it comes to an MVP race when he does the spectacular on a weekly basis?
Yeah, I was on, I believe, your fellow station in Rochester, The Fan, with Gene Battaglia, Mike Danger,
yep,
last week, or leading into the Chiefs game, actually. And I was asked if I still thought he had a chance to win MVP, and at that time I didn't. I thought the 9-for-30 game against the Ravens and the way that Lamar Jackson was playing at the time, I just didn't see Allen as being as much of a front runner or having as good of a chance to win that MVP. But after that performance and specifically that play, those are plays that stand out in terms of the voters' minds. And if you look at his interception numbers, I think that's going to be the key for him in terms of MVP voting. If he's able to keep those numbers down and get back to his early season pace, he's been a little bit more turnover prone in recent games. But if he's able to scale those back and continue to make those heroic plays, those plays of the year, as Nance said, I think he's going to make it very, very difficult on the MVP voters. I think it's going to come down to him and Jackson, but we'll see at the end of the day. Do you think Saquon Barkley might have a chance?
I think Saquon should have a chance. I mean, the Eagles have been a good team in years past, but with the decline in play in Jalen Hurts, I do think that Saquon Barkley should at least get a seat at the table worthy of conversation because of what he's been able to do for the Eagles. And you look at what a team is doing without him, it kind of helps elevate your case a little bit with just how much of a disaster the Giants are without Saquon.
Agreed. I'm not sure Brian Daboll or Joe Shane can survive that one, specifically Shane. But obviously we know with the structure, once the GM goes, usually the head coach is to follow. That just has proven to be such a poor decision. Daniel Jones now in Minnesota, that's really, really tough for the old Bills alumni there.
It definitely is. And the minute that contract handed out to Daniel Jones, who's now no longer there, I feel like that spelled the end for Shane and for Daboll there. Meanwhile, shame on me. I've gone 2 hours and 15 minutes without talking about one of my favorite players on this Bills team right now, and that's Rasul Douglas. I feel like ever since he came from trade last year from Green Bay, not only the immediate impact that he's had on this team, but how well they were able to shift as painstakingly and as heartbreakingly as they had to move away from Tre'Davious White. Rasul Douglas comes in here and says, I'll be cornerback one for you, and then, hey, Christian Benford's on the other side.
Yeah, I don't think it's any mystery that Christian Benford started to take off once the Bills welcomed Rasul Douglas into the fold. He's one of the most savvy players I've ever seen play the cornerback position. And watching he and Christian Benford throughout practices these past 2 years, those two guys are attached to the hip as far as hour after practice. Sometimes the media scrums are still going on, and those two are in the field house. Fine-tuning their skills. I posted just a minor video to social media during practice this past week, Iron Sharpens Iron, and that's really what it's been for these two since Douglas entered the fold. So I totally agree with you in terms of Rasul Douglas's production in his own right. That's undeniable. The interceptions last year, he's missed a few this year, but just as consistent as they come on the opposite side of Benford. But I think also something you have to credit him with is helping Benford's progression, maybe expediting it a little bit. You also have to give the credit to Benford, and he was showing signs even before Douglas came over. But I think you bring a veteran like that in, somebody who's willing to spread their knowledge, I think that's really worked wonders for Benford.
Staying on the defense here, of course, Matt Milano, the big story. He might be coming back for this game. And I'd imagine if he does return, he'll be on a pitch count because Dorian Williams has been playing just fine in his stead. I would imagine, though, that the fans were envisioning and dreaming of the scenario of having Terrell Bernard and Matt Milano next to each other, side by side in the linebacking core. But at some point, just how difficult is it going to be to keep Dorian Williams off the field and limit Milano snaps when he comes back?
I don't think it's going to be difficult to keep Dorian Williams off the field. I think once Matt Milano is ready to go full bore, I think you give him as many snaps as he's willing to take. Now, I was talking to Bruce yesterday. I was under the impression, as you are, that maybe they'll work him back in this week or whenever he is to return to game action. But Bruce is under the impression that once he's out there, he's going to be out there. And I agree with him in the sense that you're not going to split time between him and Dorian Williams. As well as Dorian Williams has played this year, Matt Milano is a former All-Pro, somebody who hasn't played in however many days. I think it's an incredible number. I can't remember the exact number, but he's a former All-Pro. He's somebody who's proved it in this league year after year. He's one of your veteran leaders. And like I said, as well as Dorian Williams has played, he's also had his fair share of slip-ups. So I think this has been a fantastic year in terms of Dorian Williams' progression.
But you want that veteran back. You want that former all-pro level player back on the field as often as possible. And then you have Dorian Williams waiting in the wings. We saw last year come playoff time, Terrell Bernard goes down. They have nobody to go to in their linebacking core. They got to call in A.J. Klein. So it doesn't hurt to have some depth at the position. You don't have to force anything here.
Alex Brasky of the Batavia Daily joining us here on the Westura Hotline. Bills 49ers Sunday Night Football tomorrow night in Orchard Park, New York. Alex, of course, the snow is going to be a big factor here, but less worryingly so because of the fact that the Bills are a more balanced team this time around.
Yeah, for sure. That running game is definitely going to help them in this case. We saw it against the Colts way back when with LeSean McCoy trudging through the feet of snow. That certainly helped their case in that game, and I'm sure James Cook and the crew will help their case in this one. I didn't mention with Matt Milano, I think that may play into whether or not we see him this week. Maybe if the weather is playing a role come game time, maybe they wait, play him next week in a more controlled environment in L.A., but I think they want to get him back out there in front of the home crowd, a primetime environment. Can you imagine the pro wrestling pop of Matt Milano being introduced if they are to introduce the defense tomorrow night? But yeah, the weather is certainly interesting to follow. I've been following it on social media. Michael Schwartz of WKBW posted a video live from the stadium about, yeah, I want to say 20, 30 minutes ago, and it's really starting to ramp up there. But all the reports that I've heard is it's going to stop in time for the game to be played under relatively normal conditions. It's just going to be a matter of clearing everything out for the fans to get there, and for the fans to sit down in their seats. I know that they've employed shovelers, and the Buffalo City Works, or I'm not saying the department's name right, but they do a great job trying to clear the way for fans to get to the stadium. So we'll see how it all plays out. Like I said, we're starting to see our first flakes here in Batavia. We're not supposed to get much of it. It's supposed to stay pretty south and north of us, but well, like I said, interested to see how it all plays out. Hopefully everybody stays safe, though.
Yeah, of course. Everyone's staying safe. Drive safe. And if you see someone in an unfortunate situation, if you're able to help them, do the Buffalo thing. Make sure you're able to, though, if you're willing to help them. Alex, last thing I've got for you. It's the burning question of the day, and I've had a lot of callers on this today. How confident are you in the Bills in the chase for the one seed, and how much pixie dust do you think the Kansas City Chiefs still happen to have if they haven't run out yet?
I think the way things are trending, the Bills are going to have a very, very good opportunity to claim that one seed at season's end. The way that the Bills' schedule kind of scales back at the end of the year with the matchup with the Jets, don't have the schedule in front of me, and then the two against the Patriots, so those three easy divisional matchups, and then the Chiefs, the way that they're playing right now, I'm just not so sure that they can keep this going. You see them come off the field yesterday. It looked like as if they had lost the game, and that is how they should have felt. They played poorly against a Raiders team that had lost seven games in a row going into the game, and it took a completely botched play at the end for them to walk away a winner. So the Bills will have a chance to claim the one seed at season's end. I'm just not so sure it's as important as everybody's making it seem. This year, with the Bills having that late season bye, I think they're pretty well rested. And you look at the injury report, they're starting to get a little bit healthier. Now, that could change in a few weeks, but as it stands right now, I'm not so sure that bye week would help them as much as it would in past years. And there's a chance I think it might kind of throw them off course if they continue to play as well as they are. And you get Milano back, and if he's starting to click on all cylinders, you might want to just keep it rolling. I'm not saying a game off would necessarily kill a team, but sometimes you want to keep that rhythm alive.
Alex, I appreciate being able to talk to you again. And in case people aren't following what you're doing around these parts, let them know where to find your work.
Yeah, you can follow me on X at Alex Brasky, other social media channels as well. I'm over on Blue Sky because it seems like a lot of Bills Mafia are trending over there. Also on Instagram, you can listen to the Right Here, Right Now podcast with myself and AJ. We put out a couple of podcasts each week, and our work is also available on thedailynewsonline.com. We do a little bit of commentary each week and a game preview as well and some post-game coverage. So keeping the fans involved with the Batavia Daily News, and my apologies, it's the Patriots, Jets, and Patriots is how the Bills end the season. Yep. So, yeah, like I said, I think they're going to have a chance at that one seed.
All right, Alex, I appreciate your time. Thanks for jumping on. And what's the Thanksgiving food that you hate seeing in the spread?
Cranberry sauce.
There it is.
I don't think there's any need for it.
Haters today. Let's go.
I cook Thanksgiving for my family pretty regularly. There's been a few years where it hasn't worked out when the Bills have been in Detroit, this, that, and the other thing. But I actually forgot the cranberry sauce this year. I got back home afterward, and I saw it in my cupboard, and I was like, no one noticed.
No one noticed. That's perfect. That's exactly it. You forgot, as the air quotes are there for you. I got you, man.
Right.
Appreciate it, Alex. Have yourself a good weekend, and obviously, if you're going to be out there covering the game, try to stay warm.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
That's Alex Brasky, Batavia Daily here on the West Hur Hotline. Again, Bills 49ers, Sunday Night Football, 8:20 kickoff tomorrow night. Coverage starts right here on WGR at 2 p.m. We'll take a break. Come on back. We can keep talking about the one seed. We can keep talking about the Sabres. We'll talk about anything and everything that 30 minutes has left for us here. Sports Talk Saturday. We're going to keep wrapping things up here on WGR.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That timeout is going to happen at 32 seconds.
Yeah.
The next play is going to take somewhere between 5 and 7 seconds. You're going to have 25 seconds to run your field goal unit out onto the field. Plenty of time. Plenty of time. This is unacceptable.
Yeah.
From the head coach position, your responsibility is to not panic in critical situations, to put your team in the best opportunity to win games. That's a massive, massive fail by Matt Eberflus.
Matt Ryan talking about the baffling decision-making from now former Bears head coach Matt Eberflus. That was the nail in the coffin. No, it was the press conference where he doubled down on making the right decision. There were so many different ways to go about that. What Matt Ryan just said about, you know, you can trot your field goal team on there for a rush drill, or you could even hurry the play up and throw to the middle of the field, call your timeout, bam, you've got yourself an opportunity. There were different ways to go about this, and it was also the fact that the coaching staff did not have another play in the chamber in case a sack was there. That's also poor planning by the offensive coordinator. You need to have a play ready to go in case the clock is running. And that's something the Bills are very good at, is they're able to get to the line quickly with a play in hand ready to go. So yeah, the Bears, that was not good. And of course, it results in a coach being fired. And then just one day later, the Raiders go ahead and have something very crazy happening there. Evan, I know you have the play ready to go in the clips. And here's the thing. I didn't get to watch the end of that in live time. So I'm going to react to this right now.
It would be a 50-yard field goal from here. Drops it. Flag is thrown, though. Flag will stop it.
Illegal shift on the offense.
Yep.
That penalty's declined. The Chiefs did recover the backwards pass and take over first down.
Oh, whoa, wow. On top of it.
Wow. Yikes. Yeah, so an illegal shift penalty ends up going down and declining.
Which is weird because the far official
One official has false start. One official has false start, but the other has a legal shift. So they do confer with each other, and they say it was a legal shift. That's where I'm going to go ahead and stop. Like, I'm going to draw my line in the sand. Yes, the Chiefs are getting lucky. I don't know just how much official help they've had this year, and I'm not going to count that play amongst them. because the Raiders made plenty of baffling decisions with the football themselves to where that play should not have had it come down to that. You shouldn't have. Antonio Pierce is really showing he was a great interim tag, but not probably good for the full deal of an NFL head coach.
I want to see what he looks like with a competent quarterback.
I want to see what he looks like as the defensive coordinator. Like, give him another chance, just not with the Raiders. Because what the Raiders did was they overcorrected on something that they should have done in the first place. Rich Bisaccia was a head coach, was the interim head coach, and the Raiders stormed to the playoffs after John Gruden was let go. But then they go ahead and hire Josh McDaniels. It's not necessarily always about, oh, you have to keep the interim guy. No, it's about who you hired after. And I don't think the Raiders understood that. So now this time around, they're like, oh, we got to keep the interim guy because they responded well to him. No, you just have to make the right decision if you're going to choose a coach. And Pierce is clearly showing he's not it. And they just wanted to overcorrect because they went for Josh McDaniels. Like, that's the failure there. But yeah, no, there's no grand conspiracy with the Kansas City Chiefs at this point. Why would you want to keep having the same thing happen over and over and over and over and over and over again? That's simply, to me, preposterous. 803-0550 is the number to call. Thomas in Buffalo, how you doing? Welcome to Sports Talk Saturday.
Hey, how you guys doing, man?
We're coasting along here.
Yeah, I get it. And it's funny, I was actually calling you about that final play. Now, can you help me understand something?
Yeah.
A flag was thrown, so the down shouldn't even count. And how was it a backward pass if the quarterback never physically touched the ball? It hit him, but he never physically touched it. So how was that a backward pass? I'm confused here. I get you don't want to agree with this whole conspiracy against the Chiefs and everything, but I don't understand how this team keeps dodging all these bullets, getting all this luck for some of you when they're about to lose. But can you help me understand, if you called a penalty, why did the down count? It shouldn't count. You threw a flag.
So there are pre-snap flags like an illegal shift, which the other ref on the other side had called. So one was signaling for a false start. The other was signaling a legal shift. So if an illegal shift happens there, Thomas, that's what happens is they, like, the play continues if that is the penalty call. The backwards pass thing, I don't know. That's a man doing something that I do on a weekly basis.
A snap is always considered a backwards pass.
Yes. And like, but also, you know, sometimes that's also you tripping on your own words. I do that every week. So I'm not going to worry too much about that. As for your other question about how they keep getting away with this, I wish I knew. Like, that's kind of the crux of my entire concern. You know, like, yes, I want the Bills to get the one seed, but that's also kind of why I'm dismissing it, is because Kansas City does keep getting away with this. They do keep finding a way. Whether it's bad decisions by other coaches or it's just the Chiefs managed to mud you down with their defense that day. It's just this, every head coaching staff seems to make basic errors in judgment when it comes to facing the team in red. And I wish I had a better answer than that. But there are tons of other ways that an NFL team loses a game than with the referees. The referees, let's make one thing inherently clear. Referees, on the whole, are not good. Sometimes to a point where it legitimately ruins the product. I point to the Seattle game or the Jets game when the Bills had two different games with more than 22 penalty calls accepted in each of those games. It made those games near unwatchable, if not simply unwatchable. I listened to the rest of the Jets game because I was irritated. I couldn't watch it anymore because the referees kept showing up on my screen. I did not finish the rest of the Seahawks game, even though I was sitting here in the newsroom. I figured it was more productive for me to get back to work than it was to watch the screen because it was a blowout win already. I didn't need to watch the referees keep showing up on the screen. The refs are not out to get teams or in favor of teams. They're just bad. They're just bad. That said, because they are so bad, it is hard to beat the allegations. So if you think that way, I draw the line in the sand at conspiracy. If you believe it, you have a lot that you can point to say, hey, look at this play. Look at that play. Look at this one. Look at the Chiefs, how they won against the Eagles in the Super Bowl. Look at the play against the Raiders. I get it. There's a lot. I still will go to the refs are just consistently bad at their job. And it's not just here. MLB umpires, notorious for this sort of thing, going on power trips, ejecting managers when they don't even talk to them. And it's a fan heckling them from the stands. Angel Hernandez. NHL referees. I don't know what Dylan Cousins said last night, but it could not, was it really 2 minute worthy?
I think it was because he slammed his stick on the glass, which I think is ridiculous.
But again, how soft do you have to be as a man in stripes professionally to be like, oh, that's another penalty? Like, enough. Referees take over games and it's not in a positive light. And I do genuinely get sick of it. And that's why I'm confident in the fact of like, look, I get it if you say like it's in favor of the Chiefs, it's a stacked deck. I'm still never going to join you in that though. The refs are just bad. They're cheeks. They're always cheeks. And I don't have time for a booty cheek of the week every week to talk about how bad the referees are. Because it's every week. Every week, every sport. Referees going referee. The ones that are probably of the best of mind are like the ones that have to referee like children's games. Those are your best referees. The ones that do it for the kids. Because the verbal abuse that they'll get from parents is ridiculous.
It's one of the reasons why I stopped umpiring baseball.
Yep.
I had a bad game. I got heckled by parents and
yeah,
was sick of it.
It's ridiculous.
And coaches.
Yeah. It just, so that's it. Like your best referees are in the little league level. It's bad to say, but that's the truth. So here I am vilifying the referees, and I'm also going to say at the same time, for your kids' games, don't vilify them unless they give themselves a reason to. But no, they're not out to get you. They're not out to get you. They're just not good at their job, and they don't face the media on a consistent enough basis. If you made them all full-time employees, though, leagues looking at you, please fix the situation. If you made them full-time employees, they would have to answer for those sorts of things. They would have to answer for those sorts of calls. But otherwise, we're just going to get the same old thing, week in, week out. And that's just something you have to deal with. But the Chiefs just keep getting away with it. When it comes to other teams' incompetence, when it gets to whatever you feel like thinking about it, you want to call it the refs, you want to call it other teams, you want to call it whatever it is, the Chiefs still somehow only have one loss on the season. It makes it frustrating. But at the same time, what are you going to do? You just try to keep winning your games. And the Bills are very good at that. Since 2021, Zach and I pointed this out a week ago on Extra Point, not on Extra Point, on One Bills Live.
We'd pointed out the extra fact, point, as we call it.
Yes.
Sorry.
I just wanted to get the time slot right. That's all.
Right.
But last week, Zach and I went into the stats about how well they do in December and January. They have lost two games since 2021. In December and January in the regular season. The wind game against the Patriots, so an act of nature, and overtime against the Buccaneers, a game that you could have won. if not for the fact that the refs didn't know what pass interference was as Stephon Diggs was getting hauled down. So it is what it is. The Bills, though, are great closers, and we're about to see more of that now. Could they lose a game in this final stretch here in the regular season? Yes. San Fran is the defending NFC champions. Yes, Detroit is very good. Could you trip up against, say, like New England or the Jets? I mean, stranger things have happened. Until Kansas City loses another game or the Bills lose another game, it's a frustrating conversation to have. Because if the Bills lose a game, we can all dismiss it at this point, the one seed. But until Kansas City loses another game, I don't know how much hope I can actually have in it. Because I'm not going to assume that the Bills go unbeaten through this final stretch despite their success in December. And I shouldn't assume that with the Chiefs either. But unfortunately, they keep proving to me until the rest of the league wants to calm down against Kansas City, I don't know how much faith I have in it. We'll come back, close things up here. Sports Talk Saturday. Thank you to everyone that's called in today, by the way. Very engaging show today. Had a lot of fun. To heck with cranberry sauce. You're listening to WGR. I want to thank everyone that has been involved with this show today. From Evan DePasquale on updates and running the board here, trying to keep everything from setting on fire. To our guests, Brian Koziel in the first hour right off the show. Zach Penkew, who I dragged literally in from the hallway as he was walking out to go do his job, and I interrupted him. I'm such a good coworker. Pat Hammer in the second hour, talking about the weather and everything that could affect the southern region here. Southern tier got hit pretty heavily yesterday. The south towns are expected to get hit throughout the night here tonight. So if you're going to be driving, please be careful. Look out for one another and take care of each other. And of course, then Alex Brasky at the top of this hour from the Batavia Daily joining us as well. So for my guests, thank you. For all the callers, a lot of you in the second hour brought it today. I had fun interacting with each and every one of you this afternoon as well. And I've got one last thing to say here, and it's this. You know me to be a gigantic nerd. And every time I make some sort of comment about Twitter, I always take a pot shot, it seems, every week at Elon Musk. And now it's going to get personal, dog, because Elon Musk is saying he wants to try to buy Hasbro, which is the intellectual rights to D&D. Bro, you're going to catch one hand and get one for free, my guy, if you even think about it. Stay away from my nerdy thing, you absolute ya butt. I wish I could say more creative words in that moment, but no, get away from everything that I like, Elon Musk. Nobody likes you. Stop trying to get people to like you. Go away. He's basically what... And Evan, you're going to have no idea or minimal idea of what I'm talking about here. MySpace. Like, Tom was always everyone's friend, the creator of MySpace. And if you had a MySpace, Tom was always your friend. Elon's trying to be Tom, and no one wants it forced on you. At least Tom did it quietly. He was like, hey, I'm just going to be your friend on MySpace because I made it. Whereas Elon Musk forced his way into Twitter and is now trying to force his way into other things. And it's like, can you not? Stop trying to get people to like you. Nobody likes try hard. Nobody likes it. Go away. Stop. I will shove you in a locker. Like, it's just weird, corny behavior that, you know me, I like to be real with people and genuine. This whole like me or I'll buy my way into being liked is just, you're a cornball, dude. Nobody likes you because of that. Not because of anything else. It's because you're just weird. get out of here. Don't touch my D&D, bro. Let me have my dorky thing.
Never actually played Dungeons & Dragons.
It's fun. It is. You got to be able to tap into a creative side, though.
Yeah, I feel like I need to be...
It's a beautiful break from the madness that is this job and having to constantly watch the Bills and Sabres. Like, I was hyped about the Sabres game when they managed to tie the game yesterday. I tripped over a chair in the newsroom because I'm like, yes, we're back. But, yeah, especially with the Sabres and the Bills, with how frustrating they could be, find yourself a different outlet to make sure that, you know, if they have a frustrating week, well, then you'd be able to relieve stress in a different way, healthily.
Would you say that this Sabres week has been frustrating? I would say it's more disappointing.
It was frustrating. I think frustrating not in the, oh my God, they've lost games, more in the,
oh my God, you had it and you lost it. Or like,
yeah, they were good games that it's unfortunate that you lost. The Sabres had the puck against Minnesota, and then, of course, they just had to claw their way back against Vancouver in a situation that they dug themselves in the first place.
Luckily, those were, like, it's not, I'm not trying to, you know, get moral victories because there's no moral victories, but I thought that it was a pretty solid, you know.
If you could take a point from two losses, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is that it's also got results-driven business in there.
Just don't let the Islanders get the first goal.
Do not.
Because they're going to just take it to the garage, and this will be the bane of my existence.
You cannot let the same thing that happened the last time you played the Islanders happen this time. You've got to take care of business. Don't let a team that struggles to score on you. Sabres and Islanders tonight. Pregame, Steve Foley Law pregame starting at 6:30. Puck drop at 7:30. Bills 49ers tomorrow night, 8:20 kickoff. Coverage will start right here with yours truly at 2 o'clock right here on the radio home of the Buffalo Bills and the Buffalo Sabres, WGR Sports Radio 550.